Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, could you hear me when I spoke? So you can hear me? Okay. You're not in. Yeah, but I can't hear you. You still haven't dialed in. There you go. Well, yeah, but this still doesn't explain why your name hasn't shown up on the board here. Like, you haven't shown up as a caller who's called in. Yep. Right. Yeah, you want to go online. Yeah. Oh, really? Anyways, hang up. Let's get online.
Okay.
All right, you there, my brother?
Yes, I am.
All right, good. So let's start chatting. We'll do a lot of editing, obviously, up until now. And Charlie Sheen has AIDS. Why?
Well, he has HIV, technically.
That's almost politically correct. So basically, Charlie Sheen, the guy who slept with all the Playboy bunnies and all the porn stars and all the women and always talked about how he salivated over every woman he ever met, turns out he's having unprotected anal sex with men. Which is an interesting lesson, let's say.
Dave, one, I got to interrupt. Your voice is echoing.
Okay.
Actually, hold on. I'm still hearing what you said 30 seconds ago. Do I need to sign out of Blog Talk?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
Yeah, you should only be in Skype.
Okay, now I can hear you well. Go ahead.
Is that better?
Yeah. Perfect.
All right. So 3, 2, 1. So Charlie Sheen has AIDS, or HIV, sorry. And the greatest womanizer of all time, who sleeps with porn stars, Playboy bunnies, any starlet in Los Angeles, and he's having unprotected anal sex with guys. Why?
Well, it seems like he was not homosexual or bisexual before, otherwise we'd have heard about it. And so it contradicts the modern thinking that people are born in this condition and they can't do anything about it. It seems like Charlie, and I love Charlie. I think he's an interesting guy, generally honest, not afraid to speak his mind. I admire that, but I think there's no evidence that this guy was bisexual or homosexual in the past, and now he's having unprotected sex with gay strippers or gay prostitutes or what the details are. And so why does a guy who everyone knew was straight go that way? Well, I think it's clear that sin feeds on itself. Sin has no cruise control. Once you start, oh, I'm curious, let me try this, and you go, and you go, and you go. You never stop. And I think we can all look at our own lives and say, well, when I started to become sexually adventurous and I fulfilled that fantasy that I'd been thinking about for so long, did I stop there? Did you do it again? Did you have another thought? Did you at some point have a thought that made you just a little uncomfortable and ask yourself, where did that one come from? And if you've had that experience, you should have no trouble understanding exactly where Charlie Sheen went wrong.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, because I think every male would admit to having that what the hell did I just think moment where the sexual longing just went beyond the point of understanding and went into a really, really dark place, a place that, you know, he had to sort of grit his teeth and or gnash his teeth and get out of. So I guess the game here is, why don't we try to do this? Why don't we try to say, in as almost tweet length, why don't we try to sum up? Charlie Sheen has AIDS because?
Sin has no cruise control.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, there's no better way to say it. once you start down that road and you're obsessed with sex, you're going to go anywhere sexually that you're going to allow yourself to be taken.
We have to get past this, born this way. You know, a theory comes out from the science community that we're born gay, and then they say, well, no, we haven't proven the gay gene. And I talk to atheists. The more learned the atheist is, the more likely they are to acknowledge that they don't have that gay gene. But they'll talk for a few minutes about, well, it's environmental, and then by some genetic component, predisposition, and it just, in other words, we don't have a clue. So we got to get past that born, and by the way, the general population, when they read that article that said, oh, we might have an idea that gays are born that way, everyone just acknowledged it. People who are not devout scientific atheists all believe that gays are born gay.
Right.
It's only the true learned in the scientific and atheist community which will come out and say, no, we don't have that evidence. But people were so happy to hear that that they embraced it and never let it go. Because once you go down the born this way road, well, then bisexuals have a different gene than straight gays, like Anderson Cooper, for example. And what about people who have an attraction towards children? Are they born that way too? And what people who like to have orgies, are they born that way? And where does it stop? Do we have a different gene for every, you know, sexual obsession? And I want to talk about something that I did a little research into. I was always fascinated by the ladyboy phenomenon. And why are there so many? And they all seem to be in one part of the world, in a Buddhist country called Thailand. But setting that aside for a moment, looking at the ladyboys, why are there so many? Well, they obviously must be attracting somebody, and if you research into it, you discover that it's almost exclusively attracting men. And the men that they're attracting tend to be on the straight side. So it's always been a bizarre curiosity to me. And so recently I delved into that arena again to do some research, this time reading a lot of comments on those YouTube videos. And time and time again, I read messages about, well, I'm not gay, but I would F this chick, I think they usually call them. And it really is remarkable. And then the next guy will say, oh, me too, me too. Well, where did that come from? Now, do we have a genetic predisposition or a genetic gene that says I'm into ladyboys?
And if you take the concept of sin, I mean, the ladyboy thing becomes almost pretty obvious that it's just a bridge to take people who are willing to go outside their comfort zone of sexuality to a whole other level, which is going to be the gay thing. It's a little bit more palatable way to become gay, or at least have gay sex and have plenty of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the customers of ladyboys, they're not 20-year-old, you know, curious young men. 20-year-old curious young men, assuming they weren't highly sexualized for years, are experimenting with girls still. You know, and
guess what country?
50-year-old men.
And guess Thailand. Guess what the predominant religion is in Thailand. Big shocker. Big shocker that it's ladyboys in Thailand, 94% Buddhist, the swastika Buddhist symbol. There are the mass murdering Buddhists, the ones who claim to be the Dalai Lama's the most holy man in the world, and they are the most peaceful religion of contemplation and And yet, strangely, mass murder follows them everywhere they go.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Cambodia and Asia in general, but the ladyboy phenomena, I think, is an excellent example of the sin has no cruise control. They're 40 to 50, 60-year-old men doing it. They're not 20-year-olds. So there's something about their life history that leads them to that. Obviously, no one has a genetic predisposition or a genetic attraction to that, because a she-male or a ladyboy is not even a... doesn't exist in nature, therefore you can't be born with an attraction to something that doesn't exist in nature. So until you set aside this nonsense about born this way, only then can you open your mind to the idea that sin corrupts, and we all sin. It's not about saying your sin is worse than my sin, and I'm better than you because I don't, you know, engage in this or that. We all sin. But if you don't recognize it and put a stop to it, it's only going to get worse. No one gets to a level of, let's say, 30% kink, let's call it for lack of a better word, and then stay at 30%. It doesn't work that way. Charlie Sheen, I would submit, would have never imagined that he was going to engage in the stuff that he did. He was a young guy, wild, did a lot of stuff, kept doing. He had no limits. I mean, just seeing him long before we ever knew he had HIV, the guy had no limits. We loved watching him. He was like a train wreck when he did that show for the money, and he went and people booed him and walked out of the thing. I mean, this guy doesn't care what people think. He's got to live. And he's a poster child of what happens when you live without restraint. We'd love to think that gay people are, you know, quiet, humble people who go and they find their partner and they live happily ever after. But go into the communities and see what they're doing. Of course, on TV, they're going to show it different. They're going to show the Anderson Coopers of the world, you know, committed to one person. But look at that community. Look at the sexual activity. They live without restraint. But I focus on the concept of sin has no cruise control, I think explains all the plethora of sexual decadence and deprivation that gets us into all kinds of trouble, because he went the gamut from young, fun lifestyle, straight, and we see where it ended up. He's a tragic but a perfect example of what we mean by sex has no cruise, the sin has no cruise control. Just today I was watching a movie, just to finish up. Lawyer, wife, child, generally a good marriage, no marital trouble. And then he's curious, online, high-end prostitute, curious, puts it off, shuts his computer, goes for a run, trying to fight off the urge. And he submits. And he went from having that one encounter, then the prostitute says to him, hey, you know, I have a girl, you'd love her, you know, the three of us, maybe we can get together. And he says, no, this was just a curiosity thing, I'm done with it now. And fast forward to the end of it, 10, 20 encounters later, his career is a mess, his marriage is a mess, and, you know, he's destroyed what was otherwise a fantastic life. And, by the way, he's a nice guy. Now you say, well, that's a movie. Well, the movie, you know, didn't just pull it out of thin air. I think Charlie Sheen's a nice guy. But it has to accelerate. There's no mechanism, there's no reason for decadence to not continually accelerate.
So the Bible's a book of the mind. The Bible's main priority, especially in Genesis, is to sort of explain how your mind works. And how you have your own mind. And I think if you look at what happened in the garden, where God had told Adam, you can have everything, you can eat of everything in the garden, your mind, you can do anything you want in your mind, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And God, knowing that the mind was made so that once you did something bad or you sinned and were unrepentant, you would clearly sin again and do worse. So when he said don't eat of that tree, in other words, don't know evil, what it means is that once your mind does evil or embraces evil and tries to keep it from God and is unrepentant, it will continue to do more and more evil. And this is the exact sort of, the logic of the mind that paints the sin has no cruise control as being true. It is the learning of the Garden of Eden, and what happened to Eve was the fact that once she ate of that apple, God knew that he had to cast her out of the pure spirit and into the body so that she would have to nakedly and so to speak face Satan and overcome Satan in order to come back into the garden. And this is the pure spiritual meaning behind why sin has no cruise control and why you must not embrace it.
It makes a great connection between the secular observation that sin tends to accelerate and the biblical reference. When I think back on my life, and we're two guys around 50 years old, let's call it, I, like many, I think, lived like this movie that I saw today, always with the struggle, always with the temptation. Some people deal with it better than others, but I think most succumb to it. And the societal phrase that they like to use, that if two consenting adults do something, well, what harm does it do? So they say, okay, well, cheating on your spouse is bad, but if you're just two people, well, think about that. Two people get married, and let's say it's the seventh partner I've had, and it's the seventh partner that she's had. So the Bible would say that was a sinful life if we were doing it in an unmarried state. And then this is our first marriage. Well, we decide that we love each other and we want to get married. Well, let's be honest. Part of the reason, I think, is twofold that we marry this person. One is that we do love them and we do think that they have a special place in our lives that others didn't have. But also that we come of the age, timing is everything. So she came along or he came along at the age that I should be getting married. Let's say it's 27 years old. So it's when those two things meet. You meet someone you love, and it's the age to get married. And both of you came in with a sexual history. Well, now that we've, I hope, demonstrated that sin, in fact, has no cruise control, what is going to stop you from continuing on sinning after some period of the novelty of being married and being together and taking that union seriously, as I think most people do, of course? Well, why does it stop? And then the temptation comes again, like in this gentleman's life on the movie I watched today. They both came in with a history, they get married, everything's fine, and then temptation comes, and he succumbs to the temptation. Why do we have 55% divorce rates? What percentage of the 45 are unhappy? What percentage of people are not getting caught cheating? What percentage of people maybe are not cheating, but they're frustrated as heck, and they're resentful towards their partner because of it? And why does all this happen, and how do we put a stop to it? Well, using your own ability to ward off that temptation, good luck with that one. We believe as Christians that temptation comes from Satan. And you as a secularist are going to fight that off when he knows all the tricks? Well, no wonder the large percentage of men particularly do not successfully fight off that temptation despite their wife's hopes and dreams. Not to take women off the hook, but let's focus on the man for a moment. We are in dreamland and fantasy land if we think that two people are going to come together with sexual history at the age of 27 and are going to be monogamous for the rest of their lives. Yes, of course it's possible. But evidence tells us that it's mostly not possible. So if Satan is the tempter, then having Jesus is critically important to fight that temptation. And when you fight it alone, my goodness, how difficult that must be.
Yeah, that's we live in an age where sexuality is now being a sort of put together with the words like enlightenment and words like evolved, and all of a sudden, you know, when we decide to rule out God and think of ourselves as animals, then we see sexual attraction as just being a sort of a base instinct that we're following, and monogamy, how could that possibly be even natural? The fact that we would even say monogamy is unnatural, to think that way, shows that you've ruled out the Bible as anything, and you're at that point a pure creature. And pure creatures are sort of dealt with scripturally, at least in Romans 1:18 to 32, where once man decides that he's going to worship the creature over the creator, man's mind just gets completely diluted and poisoned by Satan, and that man just becomes the worst of the worst, including lying down with other men and working that which is filthy. So now we live in a world where, called out very explicitly in Romans and how the human mind again works and what happens when it disobeys the word of God, here we have everything that God ordained and showed us in Romans 1:18 to 32 playing out viciously before our eyes. And we sit there and think that we're enlightened. And it tells you everything you need to know about New Age and enlightenment and what those things mean. Clearly they are straight from Satan's handbook. He's been around doing it since the beginning of time. In the Garden of Eden, he told Eve that your eyes will be open, you'll be like a god. And so we shouldn't be surprised, but it's very interesting how homosexuality is at the root of destroying every civilization and every society. And certainly it's called out by God as being stemming from the fact that the first thing it does is it completely destroys your mindset and focuses on pure evil.
You know, when you think of man with woman, marriage and monogamy, if you don't have a nice feeling inside when you first hear that, you're in trouble. I sympathize a great deal, but you're in trouble. Now I think of it as beautiful, secure, loving, beautiful. I could not be any happier. But when you're godless, monogamy, one woman forever, doesn't have that same beautiful feeling. We're not here to judge. We're not here to criticize. We're here to share. Neither of us were Christians 10 years ago. We've lived both sides of the fence. I was talking to an atheist recently, and he said, oh, monogamy is unrealistic, virginity till marriage is unrealistic. And this is the constant refrain I hear from atheists. Two consenting adults having sex, what business is it with anybody's? I said, okay, how do you deal with your daughter when she discusses it? Well, when she's an adult or mature enough. Well, okay, wait a second. Well, which is it? Those are two different points. If you say, well, when you're mature enough, well, she's going to disagree with you. She's going to think she's mature enough at 15. As a father, you're going to think otherwise. Okay, you say, okay, well, consenting adult. The adult is 18. Okay, so your daughter says, I have this boyfriend, I want to bring him over, and we're currently sleeping together, and we expect to keep together in your home. What are you going to say? You're stuck, because you said, by definition, two consenting adults. And do you think it bodes well for your daughter's future, happy marriage, to be engaged in sex at 18 with her boyfriend? You see, there has to be a line in the sand. We say marriage is when you start having sex. Very simple. Whether they're 20 or whether they're 30, it doesn't matter to us. The secular world has to, everybody's given a different answer. And if you want to draw this line in the sand at 18, well, okay, then we respectfully disagree. We don't believe that all these 18-year-olds should run around and be having sex with a boyfriend. We think it's a terrible, terrible life.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that there's not one truth. And one right and one wrong. So if their side says that it's unreasonable to think that anyone can hold out or what are the possibilities to suppress your hormones or that's very unhealthy, well, if our side says marriage is only ordained under the sacrament, sex is only ordained under the sacrament of marriage, and therefore it's a gift from God, well, then weigh out what happens in sex on their side of the fence versus what happens on our side. On our side, it's pretty easy. You get married, you start having sex with somebody, and you have sex with them until you die. And you enjoy all sorts of variations of it between the two of you that work for both of you, and there's never anyone out of sync because you started together when you both knew nothing, so why would one want to come in like a porn star? Where on the other side, someone comes in like a porn star and someone doesn't, so therefore you have a sexual, almost like a sexual slavery situation, or somebody comes in like a porn star and the other one is not quite so into it, and the porn star decides they have to sleep with everybody under the sun because that's just their sexuality, right? So all these things, now is that good for the family? Is that good for the children? Is that good for the health? Is that good for anything whatsoever? Except for the fact that they may have a technique, as opposed to the first situation, which says that a husband and wife were close and on the same page for their entire life of their marriage, which is their entire life. And we can argue all day long, but it's not that hard. Which is closer to the animal kingdom, by the way? The rampant, uncontrolled, whenever you want it kind of sex of an animal, which they call themselves, so they believe that they're licensed, but still, do animals go around having gay sex? Even though they'll tell you they do because they found two penguins who snuggled at one point together. No. Other animals would kill the other male if it dared even think of something like that. So, again, where in nature is there any evidence of complete sexual mismanagement and perversion?
It's up to everyone to search their own souls for whether they're defending the indefensible position or they actually believe it. I got into, now that we've kind of set aside, I hope, the born gay thing, I got into a long discussion about this gay animal theory, which I could not believe when I first heard it. And, in fact, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, my goodness, these scientists have found some animals sodomizing. So I was very interested in this evidence. And it turns out, well, no, the penguins weren't sodomizing each other. They were just hanging out, and they weren't interested in other females. Well, so what? There's people with low libido. Surely there's penguins with low libido. This was the big breakthrough. This is what they took until 2014 to find some penguins who weren't into mating. That's amazing. And then that the atheist, his name escapes me at the moment, the Jewish gentleman. He said 10% of rams are gay. When did we define gay as not being into sex? We've probably all known a guy who didn't seem as interested in girls as we were growing up, and they weren't gays. They were just guys with low libido. And because the scientists said, oh, no, we don't have a gay gene, they had to go to something else. oh, geez, we don't got the gene, so now let's find it in nature somehow. Let's find another natural explanation for it. Gay animals. Shocking. So I start going around, where's the sodomy? I mean, apes are like, you know, we came from some kind of primate, so surely we should find sodomy in the primate species. No. And they started ridiculing me about being obsessed with sodomy. Well, animals, well, I mean, how do we identify homosexuality? You know, oral and anal. And, you know, anal is the real, you know, biggie. Nothing. And then he says 10% of rams are gay. Oh, those rams, those 10% of rams would be mighty offended, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, and there's science leading the way in wisdom again. And you know, it's funny. You can't really lower the debate to even say that it's, you know, the word of God against the word of science. The problem with science is that it's actually turned itself into a counterfoil to God. So when science actually puts itself on the direct other side fence of those who believe in God on purpose, and basically refutes 180 degrees everything about God and about the meaning of God and about what faith is and about, you know, every piece of evidence that clearly exists that he's been here since the beginning and does more every day, and science still sits around and decides that it wants to be on the other side of that argument. And I find it really interesting how they really weigh in heavily on the gay animals thing. They are really fascinated about finding animals engaging in gay sex, and they're not very successful at it.
They have no choice. They have no choice. They're stuck. I mean, either you have to say, all right, we gave it a shot. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I thought science made sense. I thought evolution was true. But at some point, you have to say, you know, okay, we were wrong. I tried very hard to be an atheist. I tried very hard to believe in evolution. I know they now split pairs. They say atheism has something with evolution, but I was trying to be both, just to be clear. And ever since I was a child, you know, I went to school, learned the evolution, but it never resonated with me at all. I just did it, you know, pass the test, I guess. And then when I became an adult, I said, you know, I've always been sort of not into the evolution thing. Let me get focused on it. And I absolutely fell in love with Christopher Hitchens videos and watched a lot of stuff. And no, it never took. And then to a series of rather remarkable events, I found Jesus. But I was trying to believe in evolution and I couldn't. That should tell people something. So you have to search inside and say, why do I believe it? Because no office worker understands evolution. I've asked most of them. So do you believe it because you just believe everything science tells you, even though they constantly change and they admit they constantly change? You know, how old the Earth, how old the desert, how old the Grand Canyon, you know, it changes all the time. How old that fur, how old that bone? So do you just put your faith in science without thought? Or is there something about evolution that actually resonates with you? Or do you just hate the idea of submitting to a creator, to God? Now, if it's the last thing, if you're honest enough with yourself to say, I don't want to give up the sin, I certainly can tell you, I did not want to give up the sin. But what you discover shortly into this past is that's fantastic. Giving up the sin doesn't make life less interesting, doesn't make life unfun. It actually takes the burden of all that sin off of you, all the guilt, all the shame. And it frees you to love both your spouse and God and yourself. It's liberating in a way that I cannot describe it any more than I've already said.
And boy, I wonder who then owns sin and would like to cloak you in the depression, despair, and shame that goes along with it. And these are the spiritual questions I think that everybody needs to ask. There's all sorts of things that, you know, anyone can pursue the flesh, and anyone can pursue, you know, whether they decide that it's all about flesh and there's nothing else to worry about, or whether they decide that I'm a spiritual person and I want some spiritual answer through obviously things like ACIM or New Age or any kind of fake Jesus religion they want to make up to steal the word of Jesus and actually switch it around 180 degrees, which, you know, shocker, who's that? It boils down to sin in most cases, and when it boils down to sin and people actually choose the cravings of their flesh and the gluttony and the pride, then they are going to live a life where they're never going to be fulfilled, and they're going to live a life where they're going to be a very long way away from God when it really matters. Because it really will matter one day.
Yeah, does anybody think that, you know, all this fornication amongst the heterosexual community, whether it's just single people or young people or married people, is going to end up well? Does anybody think that rampant gay activity is going to end up well? Does anybody think transgenderism, which was embraced by society in a week, does anybody think transgenderism is going to lead to something good? Well, and this is a subject for a different time, but when people look to, you know, spirituality, they're avoiding sin-based religions or monotheistic religions, and they're very attracted to this New Age movement and Eastern mysticism and Buddhism. It's all kind of intertwined. But let's call the umbrella religion New Age, of which Buddhism is constantly revered within that. But research what Buddhism, one of the most liberal religions out there, what do they say about homosexuality? Not so kind, by the way. But when all that becomes blown over and becomes one New Age umbrella spiritual movement, the New Agers, serious New Age adherents, talk about how eternal bliss is achieved through gluttony, quote unquote gluttony. And a big part of that gluttony is sexual gluttony. They think that the more sexual engagement they participate in, the higher the level of their spiritual bliss in their eternity. Now, before you get sucked in by that, just ponder how absurd that is. And think of Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, there's Charlie Sheen. There's the, let's see, I will choose just complete out and out sexual gratification on any level I want it, and this must be a pure way to conduct my soul. It doesn't matter to them at a certain point, though, because the actual word enlightenment all of a sudden goes to describe anyone who accepts and consents to it. So whoever consents to basically sodomy is seen all of a sudden as being enlightened. That's the word we're going to use for it now. Whereas the word in its true form means seeing the light of God and understanding the light of God and Jesus and the word and the gospel, of course stolen by Satan, who likes to steal things and create false religions to steal things. And he steals the word to make it seem like those who endorse or consent to anal sex. And we sit here as a society thinking, oh, there's no downside to that, because we hate the way religion makes us feel, and we hate the way that it restrains us, and we hate, you know, look at the scary world. ISIS is everywhere, and there's global warming I've been reading about since I was in grade 2, even though I don't really understand what the evidence is. All the things that I'm afraid of, and those Muslims marching like crazy, and all of a sudden there must be something happier that I can't see. And obviously when it comes to what I can't see, well, there's New Age telling them that, yep, if we overcome the limitations of thinking that are put to us by the Christian and by the Christian God and the God of Abraham, then we will finally be happy on the other side of that. And that's the ultimate temptation of man.
What do you avoid? I mean, I would, that's a great way to end it. I would just advise people. First of all, sexual debauchery doesn't feel like enlightenment. That's exactly the way they're selling it, as you just said. You know how you feel after your engagement. You feel a little dirty, you feel a little cheerful, and it's kind of kinky. Watch your trend line. Watch your sexual trend line. Watch your fantasy trend line. You're getting corrupted, and nothing good can come of it. And then when you're at your wit's end, you have a decision to make. Either you find Jesus and you pray to him and you ask him to show himself, or you're going to choose enlightenment, even though it makes no logical sense to you as you sit here and think, sexual gluttony, I get enlightenment? They will convince you otherwise. So it's Jesus or enlightenment. That's really going to be the battle lines, even though right now it's like the Islam, and it is huge, but that's going to play its role to get you to decide between Jesus and enlightenment, if you can survive long enough from this spreading marauders. But you're going to have to make a choice. There's not going to be people 10 years from now talking about atheism and evolution. You know, evolution's fine, but ultimately they're going to be talking about eternity. Nobody's going to be, 10 years from now, going to be talking about, yeah, I'm going to live till 90 and then I'm going to die and I'm going to be, you know, soil after that. That's going to be like the laughing stock of history 10 years from now. It's going to be Jesus or enlightenment.
If you only believe what you see at the end of your nose, you're going to believe anything you see at the end of your nose. And here we go. And all the deception and all the long ago prophesized deception throughout the Bible, here it comes. And I think people have probably been talking about the end of days since the beginning of the church. But kind of hard to ignore what we're seeing now. So on that note, on that happy note, maybe we'll call it a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start doing this a little bit more often.
All right, sounds good, D.
Talk to you in a bit.
All right, bye-bye.